There you go. Now you can hear me. I want to thank Chris and Joan and Juniper and everybody who's read tonight. And what great entertainment. You know, I've been thinking a lot about this last year, and I realized that it's been tough for most of us, but I think for the poets, myself included, you know, we've tried our best to just keep writing, and certainly, you know, after the last 4 years, a period during which I sort of felt silent because there was just too much going on, I found it kind of refreshing to be able to kind of sit down and keep working. But I, you know, like all of you, I missed human contact. Hopefully we're all, you know, working really hard at returning to normal here. So I'm going to read you maybe 3-4 poems from the book that the University of Pittsburgh published now a year and a half ago, called The Painted Bunting's Last Malt. And then I'm going to read you a poem I've been working on all week, which is, you know, new material. And as always, you know, the new keeps the poet and the poetry exciting. But I'm going to go back and read you a few poems from the part of a book called Exegesis. This is a poem called Repeating Island. Repeating Island, after Antonio Benitez Rojo. My oldest daughter, Alex, brings me a map of the island of Cuba she's found in her history book. I am shaving, and in the mirror in front of me and the mirror behind me, this island of my childhood repeats itself as many times as my eyes can look. And I think of the countless times a man shaving looks at a map of his country multiply in the mirror. His daughter's annoyed expression, I say, look how it goes, sweetie. She does not know what I am talking about. This endless repetition of exiles caught in the ad nauseum act of shaving, wiping the slate clean, cutting themselves. All this bloodshed and the traveling from one place to another. Sure, it's a simple act, this act of repetition, but clearly it shows us the way. There on this mirror, that one, the island rises from the depth of the ocean, dresses itself in its most luscious green. It beckons us to return, the living and the dead. And you can imagine what the Taínos saw, what the Arawaks saw, what the Siwanee saw, what Columbus himself must have seen. An island in the near distance, its lure, a trace of green-blue tinge smudged in the horizon, a mother, a son on the verge of freedom. I spent about 5 years teaching at Bennington, and every year it was interesting and also extremely sad because someone, either faculty or student, would die. And I stopped a year before the Bennington Writing Program director died. And so this is a poem for Liam Rector. May he rest in peace. This is called Alma Profundis. I cannot think of Bennington without you in it, pulling up beside me in the car to save me from snow and another fall. Tropical birds simply cannot abide snow. Get in, you said, your sunglasses, a crow perched low on the bridge of your nose, a scarf around your neck. Always so dapper, Liam, haberdashery, dapper fresh. But this poem is really not about those cold nights at Bennington College. It's about your uncle hung from the rafters, or how my cousin died by her own hand. a slice of vein in the tub of warm, soapy water, the ghost of our jawless fathers by the campus pond, 2 a.m., night's pockets, gutted of possibility and promise. When there's nothing left for the heart to drum on, let the dark silence be shattered by one last barbaric yawp, one final struggle to swim home across 90 miles of a treacherous Florida Straits, the place where I am now. I am on a yacht, a mere hairline away from my birthplace, and these maternal waters are welcoming, sure, as if I could simply drop into them and let the currents take me in, down, deeper still, until I can see and name the nameless dead, balseros, who've succumbed to the malaise of immortality, much like you, me, the next graduate walking down the plank. Gesture. My father sat at the kitchen table, elbows on the tablecloth, eyes still as two nesting quails. He held his hands in front of him and opened each hand into a web of five scarred fingers. Then he touched their tips, hand to hand. This was his leave me alone, I am thinking gesture. We did, my father's in the grave. My wife claims she's caught me several times doing my father's gesture. I tell her though not to leave me alone, that I am not thinking, not at all. Five, I am thinking of my father's fingers as tongues of fire. He worked all day and sometimes at night, a bottle capper, a pattern cutter, a slaughterer of animals. I'm just a poet, but I can say each tip of my fingers is a river, a raft. Every day we swim home, go back to that place where my father sat on the kitchen table and looked at another dying day. And then one more from the book. This is called The Mortician's Guayabera. It hangs behind the door, white like his hands, after so much washing of bodies, flesh of pure rapture. In the eyes of a dead child, a river speaks of valleys, mountains, a scarf adrift in the currents. In a dead man's mouth, a gift of red words, a column of fire rising from cane fields in the night. This man could be a father, a son, or the Holy Trinity. A scar runs down his spine toward the back of his left leg, a Siena Canyon caught between two cupped hands of earth. It is a bird, this shirt of white, tropical humidity, mist rising above sorghum fields in El Campo, a guajiro's garb, his suave style, ready for decimas and dance, and the company of perfume ladies, white bird, egret, stork, dove rising where behind the door, you know, not know of its longing, its passing in the night when this man too used to silence wears it out in the cool evening breeze, it glows, it comes alive, a beacon to all those dying for a proper burial at home. And if you return, you will wear the plumage of birds on your back, the color of brackish water in your eyes, salt and sugar on your tongue, the sting of tears from such radiance. And I will finish with a poem that I've been working on. I'm about to turn 60 and I am overweight and I know it, and it's killing me and I know it. But one of the, you know, as come to find out in this last year, I've been doing a lot of cooking. I've rekindled my love with food and of food. And so it's been very difficult. So I'm in and out of seeing doctors who all have the same sorts of, as you can imagine, the same sorts of advice. And I go to my hematologist who I love dearly, and I see him once a year. And so This poem somehow, and suddenly I started thinking of him this week, and I wrote this poem, and it's called My Hematologist Listens to Love Songs. As he daintily places the stethoscope on my skin, first the heart, my left bundle branch blocked, heart where no electricity has seen the light of day. His breath is fig marmalade sweet. His eyes show where love hurt him bad. There is great sadness in the way he holds the metal under my double D man breasts. He is lost to the rhythms of my soon to be defibrillated heart. He tells me I will not die from this, but that I should try and get more exercise. Go out for short walks, then get up often and flex my body so that my legs won't atrophy. I love this man like I have loved all my doctors, male or female. They know I am not human for the most part. They can feel it, but don't say it. And I appreciate the confidence by which they pretend that I am already dead in their hands, a familiar ghost they've come to depend on, as if often I ravage their ears with my own stories of excess or how the first responders at Chernobyl rushed in with all their power only to become fireflies in the night, flashing their nuptial visitations in the darkness of fields. The human body feels terror first in the hair follicles, or at least that's what I feel when I look in the mirror and catch glimpses of my 60-year-old self. How we got here, I do not know, but I can tell you it's been a wild ride. First in the dirt Havana, then later in the cold of Madrid, and now in the humidity of North Florida, where the birds are falling dead from the skies. I can tell he is done, and he pulls me from the table and asks me to dance. He tells me I will not be dying today and kisses me on the lips. Thank you very much.